Hello, everyone. And welcome to episode 171 of Left of Skeptic. My name is Brittany Lind.
And I am Kayla Moria.
And we are a paranormal podcast.
Yes, we are.
Kayla.
Brittany.
How are you?
I am good. I did so much yard work this weekend.
That's awesome.
Well, Sean mowed the lawn. To be clear, Sean mows the lawn.
Well, we already knew that.
Because I hate it. But I got all the bird feeders out. It's bird paradise. I went
amazing.
I went and bought a bird bath. I got the peanuts out. So I'm feeding my crows and there's all these little chickadees around. And then my hot tub is set up. I set it up last night. And when I went to go look, last night it was at 46 degrees. It's already up to 88, which means tomorrow is hot tub time.
When do I get to come in hot tub with you?
Whenever you want. Friend soup. Let's go.
Yeah, friend soup. Let's just
You're not sensitive to chemicals, are you, though?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, then we're good.
As long as it's not ginger.
No,
I'm pretty okay. And everyone, I don't think that's in hot tub chemicals.
No, as far as I'm aware. It's just I like to ask because there are some people who don't think about the fact that even personal, like, inflatable hot tubs have to use chlorine.
Oh,
so I want to make sure there is chlorine in there.
Yes. I grew up with grandparents who had an outdoor pool.
Ooh,
and a friend who had an indoor pool, which is weird to see in East Central Minnesota.
I have never seen anybody with an indoor pool, but I have a vague memory of my grandparents having an outdoor hot tub in one of their houses.
Loved it.
I'm a fish. If I can be in water at all points, I would be.
I am not as good right now. Weirdly, I don't know. It's something about the big boobs. I feel like.
I've never had that problem, so I wouldn't know.
I don't know. They both are buoyant and also weigh me down. And I don't really know the science of that. But alas, here we are.
So it would mean that your boobs are about the same density as water?
I think so.
If they were less dense, they'd float completely. But if they were more dense, they'd be like weights.
Yes. So I think they're
science,
a little
folks.
Bit. Yeah. So science. It's or maybe they're just so buoyant that they float. But then the rest of my body doesn't know what to do about the fact that part of me is floating. So the rest of it sinks. I just don't know how to do pools anymore now that I'm a woman.
Well, luckily, it's a hot tub. So you just sit there.
I love that. Give me that good hot tub tubbing.
How are you doing?
I'm good. I just literally ran down downtown to get to my car. I was at a work meeting at, luckily, a brewery. But, I'm
a little tired.
I'm a little tired. I'm a little out of it. It's fine. Everything's cool. Kayla's story is first.
Well, let's shake it up. Let's shake up your insides a little bit with some good laughter.
I love it. Give me some jokes.
Some jokes.
Jokes.
What's a zombie's favorite cereal?
Wait, Raisin Brains.
That's a good one. No, it's Rice Krispies.
Mine was so much better.
Yours is better. Where do fashionable ghosts shop?
At the Gap.
Boutiques.
Oh.
Hey, I got an actual genuine laugh out of you. All right. I want you to have a moment to have a breather. So should we crack into it?
Let's do it. The unison of that was fucking beautiful.
We've gotten really good at our coordinated cracking.
Oh my gosh.
So it's been a while since I've done an alien story. And I wanted to do this.
It has been.
It's been a hot minute.
Since Mal's hole.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because I did the Area 51 caller. Yep. And I was like, you know, I feel like bringing it back. We're bringing it back. So extraterrestrial beings have had tons of different names over the years, like in media and UFO circles. E.T., Greys.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the most popular is in like that is a recognizable reference is probably like Little Green Men.
I was going to say Greeny McMeanies, and that's not actually their names.
So today I'm going to tell you about the encounter that many have determined to be the beginning of the little green men description.
I don't know the origin story. I'm actually really excited about this.
So this is best known as the Kelly Hopkinsville encounter.
Okay.
The story begins on the night of August 21st in 1955 in Hopkinsville, Kentucky, which is a small town about 20 miles north of the Tennessee border. I mean, smallish. Now it's got about, I think, like 30,000 people in it. So a little bit smaller than Sunnydale.
Love the Buffy reference.
If you're wondering why the name Kelly is also thrown in there, it's because it's referring to the nearby unincorporated community of Kelly, so they're often put together.
Is that why Kelly green is a color?
I do not believe so. I don't know the origins of Kelly green, but I feel like it's been longer than the 50s.
Sorry.
So which area they, like some people say near Kelly or near Hopkinsville, it's all the same area. A large family named the Suttons arrived at the Hopkinsville police station that night, and they began telling a terrifying story of how otherworldly beings arrived on their farm. This became one of the most detailed, odd, and kind of perplexing accounts of a close encounter in the United States. It is considered especially notable due to the large number of witnesses. 11 people had the same story.
Wow.
How long the encounter happened, which happened over an entire evening into the night.
Wow.
And the close proximity between the witnesses and the creatures, sometimes just like walk, like an easy walking distance away, a few feet away.
Okay. Now I'm seeing why the little green men is such a prevalent idea.
Yep, exactly. And this incident quickly became regional and even national news. The alleged encounter occurred on the Suttons farm in the tiny rural hamlet of Kelly, Kentucky. The farm consisted of an unpainted three-room house without running water, telephone, radio, TV, or books.
They were just boring.
Yeah, they're just farming. They're just a farming, like it's them and their property and the
house. Guess you don't have a lot of time if you're just farming.
Farm chores got to get done. It's a good
farming
day
all
for
day.
Hay. According to History Channel's website, all of the details of their story, the UFO landing and the appearance of a small alien creatures, like, of all these details, one fact is indisputable. When the 8 adults and 3 children arrived at the police station in Hopkinsville at about 11 p.m., they were genuinely terror-struck. Quote, "These aren't the kinds of people who normally run to the police for help. What they do is reach for their guns," unquote. And that was a quote from Police Chief Russell Greenwell. Yet, here they were. The men and women and children all upset, and one man with a pulse of 140 beats per minute, as measured by an investigator, and I don't know that, but I'm guessing it's high.
I feel like if they mentioned it specifically, it is, but I also don't.
I don't know
the reference. Yeah. I don't know the comparisons.
Like, what's my average BPM? I have no idea. I don't have a smartwatch, so
I think mine's about 96.
So that would be really high, and I think. Are women's typically higher than men's?
I think so.
We should stop pretending like we know because
Yeah, we're just giving a bunch of false information.
I'm not a nurse, okay? I'm not a medical professional in any way. So Elmer Lucky Sutton, who was a young man in his early 20s, was visiting his mom, Glennie Lankford, who was a 50-year-old widow, and his 3 younger half-siblings, who were 12, 10, and 7, at the farmhouse where he'd grown up. On break from his job with a traveling carnival, Lucky had his wife, Vera, their friends, 21-year-old Billy Ray Taylor and 18-year-old June Taylor, with him for the weekend, and his brother, JC, and sister-in-law, Aileen, plus a family friend, OP, were all there that night. According to the witness accounts given to the police, at about 7 p.m. on the hot Sunday evening, Billy Ray was fetching water from the backyard when he saw a silvery object. Because remember, they don't have running water in this house, so the only way to get it is
from... No, they have nothing in this house.
The only way to get it is from the well. So, he's out there getting some water, and he saw a silvery object, real bright, with an exhaust all the colors of the rainbow. As it came silently towards the Sutton house, passed over it, stopped in the air, and then dropped straight to the ground. He ran into the house to tell them exactly what he saw, and he's freaking out, and the Suttons did not take him seriously. They're like, Billy Ray, you joking? Absolutely not. Apparently,
These are no nonsense farm people.
Well, apparently they took it as a prank because, I mean, they're in their like really, really early 20s.
Yeah.
And they're childhood friends. So Billy Ray and Lucky were known to like prank each other.
Oh, okay.
So they thought it was just another one of those. But Billy Ray seemed genuinely bothered by whatever he'd seen, despite the other's insistence that it was probably just a meteor or a shooting star. Like when they had accepted the fact that it wasn't a prank, they were trying to give him logical explanations for what he saw.
And this is how you know it's the 1950s and not a point where there's the internet.
Exactly.
Because a silver object that is trailed by a rainbow that just immediately and then boom, falls from the sky.
That's the only star I know to be silvery and followed by a rainbow. The more you know star.
Except for it's actually gold. But still, it's followed by a rainbow.
Damn it. I'm remembering things wrong.
I think it's technically yellow.
Something like that. Anyway, back to the Sutton farm. An hour later, alerted by the barking of a family dog, Lucky and Billy Ray went to the back door and saw a strange glow. When they looked closer, they reported that there appeared to be a small humanoid creature in the middle of the glow. From the description they gave, they said the creature was about 2.5 to 3.5 feet tall. It had a round, bald head with no nose. Note, one man stated very strongly that there was no nose. He was very freaked out by the no nose aspect. The ears were swept back and extended quite a bit above the head.
Like an elf?
Like more distinct than an elf. They're saying like it went up above the head.
Up and, okay.
The eyes had a yellow center with a white rim, and they seemed to be about 6 inches apart on the face and glowing.
Yellow center with a white rim. Does that mean they have central heterochromia?
Well, I mean, I think it would just be like...
Oh, instead of a pupil.
Yep, exactly.
Okay.
The mouth was a thin line, but they're not sure it was a mouth because it never spoke. It could have just been a line in the head. It appeared to have little to no neck. The body looked powerful above the waist with what appeared to be clearly defined muscle lines, but below the waist, it was thin and spindly. The legs were stick-like with almost no shape to them. And the creature either didn't have feet or they just couldn't see the feet or what they looked like.
Boy ain't got no booty.
No booty, no feet. Their hands appeared oversized in comparison to the rest of their body and had talons about 2 or 3 inches long with webbing between the fingers. And the body gave off an eerie shimmer in the light of the moon like it was made of silver metal. So, strange short king out in the field. They were justifiably freaked out.
Yeah, yeah.
The two men grabbed a 20-gauge shotgun and a 22 rifle and fired at the little man. Its hands raised up as if it was held at gunpoint as it came toward the back door. They reported that it then did a flip, a flip-de-doo, scrambled upright, and then fled into the darkness. So it was a very shoot first, ask questions later type of scenario.
Humans suck. That seems to be our first go-to. We're like, we're not even going to see if you're friendly. We're just going to shoot at you first.
We're just going to shoot. We're just, because logic, and also 50s.
I mean, I get it. 50s, it's new, it's scary.
Southern farmhouse men, it's, well, I mean, that cop even said that. They're like, these aren't the people that, you know, come to the cops for help.
Oh, that's true. They just get their guns.
And these people did exactly what that cop predicted.
All right.
So shortly after that, like, they went back inside and the men saw a similar creature appear in a side window. They fired through the window screen and the report said, still impervious to bullets, the little man again flipped and disappeared. And my brain immediately goes to, like, impervious to bullets, or are you a bad shot?
I was going to say, I bet he's just ducking real. I mean, he's already doing flipsy-doos. Yeah. I assume he's just really good at, like, ducking.
Yeah. Bob and weave.
Can't get me.
Zigzag.
Zigzag!
You zigged when you should have zagged. Mrs. Lankford spoke to Isabel Davis, who is author of a report titled Close Encounter at Kelly and Others of 1955, and said, I went out into the hallway and crouched down next to Billy when I saw one approaching the door. It looked like a 5-gallon gasoline can with a head on top and small legs. It was a shimmering bright metal like on my refrigerator, unquote. So Billy Ray Taylor stepped outside under the small overhanging roof. He's like, okay, fuck this. They're coming at our windows. I'm going to step out there. I'm going to I'm going to show them who's boss.
Yeah.
So he steps out there, and the others from the household were like close behind him, but still in. And then those behind him claimed they saw a claw-like hand reach down and touch his hair. People started screaming and pulled Taylor back into the house while Lucky shot above the overhang and then at another similar creature in a nearby tree. He said after he shot at it, it floated to the ground and scurried into the woods.
That is, I'm just imagining that scene from Signs where that little hand like yes. crawls under under the door, but instead it's like, let me touch your hair.
Just like, well, I mean, if these are all, maybe if these are like short, bald aliens, maybe they're just fascinated by hair. They're like, ooh, what's it feel like?
Right. I don't have that.
Or maybe they just find Billy Ray dreamy. Like, you ever just
I mean, his name is Billy Ray.
Have you ever just looked at somebody and been like, I want to run my fingers through their hair? And that's what overtook these
And they just, they don't have the social aspect to be like, that is wildly inappropriate and crosses so many boundaries.
Oh, geez. Oh, geez.
I know I get you when you start saying the oh, geez.
So after that last incident, the Suttons stayed inside and spent several hours listening for movements. They said they mostly just heard occasional scratches on the roof. At 11 p.m., thoroughly freaked out and not knowing what else to do, the whole group went to their cars and drove fast to the police station in Hopkinsville.
Wait, how many adults?
Like 8 11? Adults.
Oh, okay.
And 3 children.
Okay.
After the police chief called for backup, that his team was joined at the Sutton farm by state police, military police from nearby Fort Campbell, and a photographer from the Kentucky New Era, the local newspaper. After some investigation, they found shell casings from the gunshots, but no other evidence. Their next step was to assume the shooters were drunk and seeing things, but they couldn't find any proof that there was any drinking going on. And Glennie Lankford, you know, the matriarch of the family, the widow whose property this is,
yeah,
swore that, quote, liquor was not allowed in the farmhouse, unquote.
Okay.
Once the police and others left, though, the family said the creatures returned at about 2:30 a.m. and stayed until about daybreak. Mrs. Lankford said she saw one glowing repeatedly by her bedside window with its claw-like hand on the screen.
Once again, reminded of a TV show, Mr. Burns, when...
Oh,
what does he say?
I don't remember.
He's like, peace be with you.
I have barely watched The Simpsons.
I know, but Mulder and Scully were in that episode. Love.
Glennie Lankford submitted a handwritten testimonial of her experience saying, on Sunday night, August 21st, 1955, about 10:30 p.m., I was walking through the hallway, which is located in the middle of my house, and I looked out the back door and saw a bright silver object about 2.5 feet tall appearing round. I became excited and did not look at it long enough to see if it had eyes or moved. I was about 15 or 20 feet from it. I fell backward and was carried into the bedroom. My two sons, their wives, and their friends were all in the house and saw the little man that looked like a monkey. About 3:30 a.m., I was in my bedroom and looked at the north window and saw a silver shining object about 2.5 feet tall that had its hands on the screen looking in. I called for my sons and they shot at it and it left. I was about 60 feet from it this time. I did not see it anymore. I have read the above statement and it is true to the best of my knowledge and belief. So this is like an official submitted to the police report, aside from the interviews they gave later. Now, you might be thinking what I'm thinking, which is, with all this commotion going on, multiple gunshots, all of this, what the heck were the neighbors thinking was going on?
Oh, I assume the neighbors were really far away.
Well, apparently, the neighbor about a quarter mile to the north of them had noticed lights in the woods behind the Sutton farm and figured the family was searching for one of their pigs that had gotten out.
Ugh, classic.
Later, when he heard gunshots, he imagined they were dealing with a bobcat or some other type of wild creature.
I was going to say, like preying on their livestock. Yeah.
Yep, coyotes, those kind of things. I figure gunshots probably, when you're dealing with wildlife like that and trying to protect your property, it's probably not abnormal to hear them trying to, like, kill off a coyote.
Or just, I think the sound would just scare them away.
Yeah. The day after the incident, police investigators returned to the farmhouse, searching for evidence of saucer landings, footprints, blood trails, scratch marks on the roof, anything to like corroborate what the Suttons had told them. They found nothing.
Look, those aliens, they knew when to zig and when to zag. They weren't going to get hit.
Bud Ledwith, a local radio station employee, interviewed the adults and made drawings based on their accounts. According to Isabel Davis, the author I mentioned earlier, he said he was impressed by their remarkable specificity and consistency, even though the men were away from the farmhouse all day and unable to coordinate with the others. So I have the drawing that was put up.
Ooh.
Imagine seeing that in your window.
Okay. Okay. It does look like a...
Goblin is what I went
with. I was going to say elf, and I was trying to think of something that was scarier than that. It's very goblin-y.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like something, or like the mer creatures from Harry Potter movies.
Yes.
Yep. It's got that same kind of vibe, but smaller.
Yes. And also they had their ear things were like flippers, whereas these are just fucking
tall ass
pointy ears.
Well, the incident eventually attracted the attention of the U.S. Air Force UFO Investigation Program, a.k.a. Project Blue Book. Documents suggested that its team never officially pursued the matter beyond checking with their Fort Campbell counterparts, the ones that had showed up that night to help the police. And they had been, like, briefly at the scene, and they decided not to go any further with it. So it did not become a part, really, of Project Blue Book.
With 11 adults, like, corroborating the story, they're like,
Yeah, I guess I don't know how they determined what ended up, because I feel like there has been less substantial stuff that has ended up in our Project Blue Book readings.
That's what I'm saying.
Despite the police not finding any physical evidence of the little glowing-eyed short kings, the press took the story and ran with it. The next day, the Kentucky New Era had an article with the headline, "Story of Spaceship, 12 Little Men Probed Today. Kelly Farmhouse Scene of Alleged Raid by Strange Crew Last Night. Reports Say Bullets Failed to Affect Visitors." Which I feel like nobody said anything about being probed. They're just like,
This is where the media,
fake news.
Hashtag fake news.
Just a few days after, radio stations and newspapers, including the New York Times, reported the incident, hundreds of curiosity seekers descended onto the farm, and a lot of them were rude motherfuckers.
I'm not surprised.
Visitors often ridiculed the Suttons, calling them frauds.
Bro, why even show up?
Or stupid.
Like, come on, man.
And they had no trespassing signs put up, like bigger ones. I'm sure they already had some, but they put up more.
Yeah.
And they proved useless. People still just kept trampling onto their property. So after that, they, as a way of like trying to get something out of this or discouraging people from continuing to do so, they tried charging admission. 50 cents for entering the grounds, $1 for information, $10 for taking pictures. In today's money, that would be $5.69 for admission, $11.38 to get information from them, and $113.80 for taking pictures on their property.
I mean, I think that's a pretty smart response, because otherwise you're just going to get harassed. So yep. If you make it a business plan, it's like, I'm sorry, you have to pay to harass us. At least make it worth my while, man.
Give me something here, especially like if you're trampling on the farm, like how much of the day-to-day operations are they interrupting and bothering?
They already don't have a TV. They don't have running water. They're very dedicated to their farm life. Like, yep. They should at least get paid.
So after that, the skeptics blasted them, saying they were using this as a made-up story to make some money. Like, you mean we can't just come trampling all over your property anymore?
I can't greedy just tell you how stupid you are.
I have to pay for it. This is obviously fake. You know what? I have to pay for tons of things that are real.
I know. You should have to pay for things that are fake, too. I don't know. I lost
something in there.
I lost it somewhere.
Joanne Smithy, the vice president and chairperson of the Kelly Little Green Men Days Festival, said, "There were so many reporters and looky-loos coming by and walking around the property, taking things and calling them souvenirs, that the family got sick of being harassed and called liars, and they left within 10 days.
Shit. Okay.
Glennie, who had always lived in the country, was so put off and shaken up by this whole thing that she sold the farmhouse and moved into an apartment in town. She gave up her farm. I mean, suppose you're a 50-year-old widow. You got, like, still some young kids. Maybe keeping up with the farm is difficult anyway, but still.
I mean,
this might have been, like, the straw that broke the camel's back.
I mean, honestly, I would just love to have the ability to easily take a bath and not have to fill it up, like,
with the
one
water.
Pot at a time. Boiled on the stove.
As the story spread into the world, it took on a life of its own. The number of little men grew to a dozen or more rather than just the few that they encountered. A few years later, the story of these little metallic glowing aliens was confused and then eventually merged with an Eastern Kentucky woman's report of a flying saucer with a 6-foot-tall man in green.
Okay.
And soon it became the myth of the little green men.
I bet that's where their ears disappeared.
Yep, yep. I think that's where a lot. And then, like, I think 6-foot-tall, like, so you think gangly. So even though these ones were, like, it's really muscular, these other ones, like, I think it's just where a lot of it got confused.
Look, they got really good biceps.
It's always arm day, never leg day. Geraldine Stith, who is the daughter of Lucky, recalled when she was 8 years old and watching TV with her brother, and a man and a woman knocked on their door. Geraldine answered the door, and a couple who, quote, looked like they were just coming from church, unquote, wanted to know if her parents were home. Lucky came to greet them and speak with the couple, but once he realized what they wanted, he figured it was time to finally tell his kids about the events that happened on that August night in 1955. Because those guests were writing a book about UFO sightings, he explained, and wanted him to contribute his own experience. This was the first time Lucky had ever told his kids about that encounter in that farm.
Okay. I assume it wasn't the Warrens. I was going to guess the Warrens, but they do ghost stuff.
No, it didn't specify who it was. It was just people writing a UFO book.
Okay.
Stith remembered, quote, "My daddy didn't like how people treated him once the story got out. People made fun of him. It was traumatizing. Still to this day, the witnesses who are alive are afraid to talk," unquote. It affected people, like, in the whole family. Stith said this whole thing was the reason her grandmother moved, because she felt safer around people than out in the country. Her uncle JC couldn't hold down a job anymore because it psychologically messed with him. And so it just affected everybody that was there, is what she was getting at. One of the most thorough investigations of the Kelly incident is the investigation done by Isabel Davis. It was published several decades later by the Center for UFO Studies, a group founded by astronomer Dr. J. Allen Hynek, Project Blue Book civilian investigator. So even though it wasn't included in Blue Book, there's some connections there.
They did look into it a little bit.
Yep. Her nearly 200-page report, co-written with Ted Blosher, includes detailed maps, drawings, documentary records, summaries of similar accounts from around the world, and interviews with several Sutton family members and police investigators. Davis did summarize the police's concerns about the lack of evidence in her report, so she put it out there like the police didn't find anything. But she also pointed out that she feels that none of the possible explanations, such as a deliberate hoax, a publicity play, or group hallucinations, made sense. While questions arose about whether the young men were exaggerating, possibly fueled by, you know, hidden liquor, because mama says no drinking in the farmhouse, but nobody said anything about out in the yard. That's where my thought process went. Davis's strong impression after meeting Mrs. Langford was one of a no-nonsense mama who hated being in the spotlight, and she had no reason to lie, and the family seemed to respect her and not have any reason to lie either. She also noted that according to other locals she interviewed and from everything else she could drum up, none of the witnesses had any history of making up outlandish claims or trying to grab the spotlight.
Right.
According to 2008's A World of UFOs by Chris A. Rutkowski, Dr. J. Allen Hynek, the UFO researcher highly regarded for his work with the U.S. Air Force, did call the Kelly Hopkinsville case preposterous and offensive to common sense at one point.
Okay.
In 2006, senior research fellow of the International Committee for Skeptical Inquiry And self-styled paranormal investigator Joe Nickel, Mr. Nickel, the man we've referenced several times when we're searching for our skeptical side, reviewed the evidence of this case and wrote a report titled Siege of the Little Green Man, the 1955 Kelly, Kentucky incident. In the report, he raised suspicion about what he called Billy Taylor's embroidered testimony, and he matched Taylor's UFO sighting with similar reports from that era, suggesting a small meteor in the vicinity. So he's basically saying other people saw something, so it was a meteor, not an alien. I'm like, but if everybody saw something, how do you know it was a meteor? If you don't know what it actually was, why didn't they just see a UFO?
Right.
As for the little men, Nickel floated out an explanation saying it was owls, because that's what we love to compare aliens to, is owls.
No, owls do not have those kind of upper body muscles.
Owls don't skip leg day. In particular, he's saying it was the great horned owl, or the hoot owl as it's otherwise known, because it has long wings that could be mistaken for arms.
Mm-mm.
It has the talons, the yellow eyes, long ears that protrude above the head, and that the glowing could be the like reflection in the moonlight off of the feathers and the eyes. So he's going with owls.
Okay.
But while hoot owls are known to be, active at dusk and extremely defensive when defending their nests, they're not really hostile.
And they haven't been known to attack people in their houses.
And also, if they were defending their nests, like, why was this only this one night? And
you'd think that as people who live in the country, they would know what owls look like.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. In 2005, Stith was invited to speak on a panel at an event commemorating the 50th anniversary of the sighting. And she found dozens of people who were fascinated by the encounter, but had the facts all wrong. The information had been so misconstrued over the decades that sources were misquoting witnesses' names, claiming there were 12 aliens being there instead of 3 or 4 that her family had estimated. And she said, I thought, I've heard this all from the horse's mouth. If people want to hear the story, let's get it right. So she chronicled her family's experience in the books Alien Legacy, published in 2007, and The Kelly Green Men, Alien Legacy Revisited, in 2015. So she's like, I got the real story. I'll write some books.
Y'all are being ridiculous. They weren't owls.
You're still stuck on the owls thing. In 2010, when Kelly's community organization started figuring out how to plan a fundraiser and they were trying to think of a theme, they were like, ha-ha, I know what to do. And thus began the Little Green Men Days Festival in Kelly, Kentucky.
I love that.
Stith is a regular speaker at the event and similar conventions. And apparently I was trying to look up when the date would be this year. The last one I could find was from 2019. So I don't know if they've picked it up again since COVID.
Yeah.
But if it ever comes up again, I wouldn't mind.
Kentucky's not that far away. It's also where Christine from And That's Why We Drink lives. And maybe I'd go and try and see if I could run into her. Just to be like,
you're like me when I go to Texas.
And then walk away.
You're like me when I go to Texas and just go to a place that I hope Jensen Ackles may be.
I know. I was
like, okay, I'm in Austin. I could see Jensen Ackles.
Possibly. If not, that's fine. If I do, what a treat.
Want a little treat for me. Stith also is very defensive when people criticize her family for their actions that night. Festival goers, when she's been a speaker, have expressed opinions that, the same things we were thinking. Why did they shoot at the creatures? They shouldn't have done that. Or if it had been then, they would have invited the little men in. And Stith says, quote, my dad was trying to protect them. They were country boys, and that's what they knew to do, to get their guns. My family went through something, whether it be paranormal or extraterrestrial, that changed their lives forever. I just want people to realize the terror they went through that night. Unquote.
Okay, I never said invite them in.
No, you did not say, but I'm just saying.
I wouldn't.
But it's just one of those things, I think it's natural outside of that moment to
why didn't you just invite them in? Like, have some tea.
Why was shoot first the answer? But then also, God, that had got to be freaky.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not saying shoot first is the answer, but I'm not saying blindly invite them into your home is also the answer. I'm thinking like neutral ground on the yard.
I'm thinking
let me like, see what happens. Guns prepared.
Close and lock all the doors and windows.
Right.
And chill.
Yeah.
Because also like they flipty-dude, but they flipty-dude after you shot at them.
Right. So maybe like, they wouldn't be flipty doing all over.
Maybe they would have gone somewhere else. They would have been right. like, there's nothing here. This is boring.
Maybe they heard the sounds and were like, oh, curious. What is that?
What is going on?
Oh, my gosh.
So that is the story of the Kelly Hopkinsville encounter. So on a skeptic scale, yes. Para to normal. Para being 5. Normal being 1. What are you going to say about this encounter?
I'm going to give it a 4.5.
Nice.
I think that everything they did sounds pretty legit. I also think that as good old boys who are just going to shoot first and ask questions later, they wouldn't have gone to the police about it.
And that's why I was going to give it a 4, is the same like, thing. Like we've used this as an excuse for a high rating many times of people that you're like, oh, you wouldn't have gone to the cops and you felt scared enough to go to the cops. And the fact that the rest of the local community that people have like interviewed have said things like, yeah, they're not really attention grabbers. They're not trying. I've never seen this anything like this before. Yeah.
Grandma doesn't want to move from the farm. Like however old she is, she's got other people to help her.
Yep.
But she's going to go from farm life to apartment living in the city.
Yeah.
Mm.
Brittany, what do you got for me this week?
Huh. Well, I had a very different topic picked out for this week, but then I decided that I wanted to spend a little bit more time on it. So instead, I'm bringing you a cryptid from the same area.
Ooh, cryptids and aliens?
Yes.
What an episode. What a time to be alive.
I know. Like, what? You guys are so lucky. So we're just going to hang around West Palm Beach area of Florida for like a couple of weeks because I'm going to go back there next week. But tonight, I'm going to bring you the story of the skunk ape.
Okay, I've heard of the skunk ape, but
I had never heard of the skunk ape.
I have heard of the skunk ape, but I've never, like, dug into it. Because I think it might have, I thought it was something listed in the fearsome creatures.
No, it's only in Florida.
But then I was, like, looking more into it and... Yeah. Like, and I saw its location. I was like, never mind, not one of these. And then I left it alone. So I'm excited to hear more.
I think it's a very humorous and fitting name for essentially like the Bigfoot of Florida. Like, the Bigfoot of Florida is called the Skunk Ape.
Like, this is a Bigfoot, but it's in Florida. So you know it's stinky.
It's stanky. Now, while many of the more well-known sightings of the skunk ape occurred in the 1970s, the bipedal human ape-like creature has actually been part of local folklore for over a century. The skunk ape primarily is described as a 7-foot-tall, 400 to 500-pound creature with reddish to dark brown fur and a horrendous smell. Like a smell that is, quote, described as a revolting mixture of wet dog, skunk, and rotting eggs. Unquote.
Worse than skunk then.
Oh yeah, it's not great. The Seminole people, the indigenous people of Florida and Oklahoma, for much of their history has basically described the skunk ape. Called the Esti Jopjocky, meaning tall man, is described in local lore as being a creature with great strength, strong enough to rip apart trees to use them as clubs. They also are said to be, unlike many of like the Bigfoot legends that imply a more vegetarian-centered diet, they are said to be carnivores and sometimes described as being cannibalistic.
Okay. So we're not just dealing with a Bigfoot.
In Florida.
We're dealing with a pissy, aggressive, tree-rim...
Grabbing,
tree limb, just ripping, angry. This is terrifying. This is like the more you describe like skunk ape, I'm like, oh, this is hilarious. The more you describe, I'm like, no, I don't like this at all.
No, he's really strong. He's really big, really heavy, really stinky. And he likes to rip up trees and then club things with it.
cannibalistic, eating other skunk.
Yeah, I that, you know, honestly, that was the worst one, and I completely forgot to mention it. The earliest published report of the skunk ape, which is a term that wasn't actually coined until the 1960s, came from Sewanee County, east of Tallahassee, in 1942, when a man reported that one of the creatures rushed out of the brush line when he was driving down an isolated road and hitched a ride on the running board of his car for nearly half a mile before jumping off and racing into the woods. Just hitchhiking. Well, not hitchhiking. What's it called when skateboarders do that?
When they
grab onto the back of a car and then they roll with it.
I have no idea. I'd call it car surfing, but maybe that's too on the nose.
Well, that's what the skunk ape did. He was car surfing.
On a skateboard?
In 1942. No, he just jumped on the back.
Oh,
and was like,
oh, okay.
Not riding the waves,
so,
but
literal
riding
car
the,
surfing.
Yes, yes, yes. In Putnam County, Florida, in the small community of Barden, there were a number of sightings of an ape-like creature beginning in the 1940s, though they actually refer to it as the Barden Booger.
There's all these hilarious names for this terrifying fucking creature.
Yeah. In 1957, three hunters said that one of the creatures invaded their camp in Big Cypress National Preserve in the southwestern corner of the state. And actually, Big Cypress National Preserve is kind of a big deal in this story.
Okay.
Just saying. In the 1960s, there were a handful of sightings that happened around the... Also, I'm so sorry, Floridians. I am going to butcher most of these places. A handful of sightings that happened around Alucha County and Marion County, Florida, including one in 1963 that involved several members of a family encountering an ape-like creature around their rural home. This is reminding me of your story.
Okay.
So one night they reported that it approached a window to peer inside.
Don't like that. I think I would be more freaked out by something like this in the window than I would the little silvery green men.
I'm sorry. You mean the ginormous, scary ape-like creature smells real bad?
Yeah, I'd be way more terrified by that.
In the 1970s, two Palm Beach County Sheriff deputies named Marvin Lewis and Ernie Milner reported that an ape-like creature stalked them through the grove before they shot at it. Shooting at them. They said that they followed a trail of footprints to a barbed wire fence that had been pushed down, and the creature had allegedly snagged some of its hair on the wire, which the two deputies recovered as evidence. That's all the information I have for you about that.
They don't have like a description of like this hair looked like dog hair, like human hair, like
no, obviously it looked like an ape.
Okay.
Hair. Whatever that looks like. There were multiple sightings in Broward County between 1971 and 1975, where many people reported nighttime encounters with a 5 to 7 foot ape-like creature with dark red to black fur. These sightings were widely publicized across the state, leading to the popularization of the term skunk ape.
Meanwhile, I'm just over here. It's giving me.
What is it giving?
It's giving me June 2012 in Duluth flood. Like where so for those that don't get that reference, in 2012, Duluth had a flood. We never flood. It flooded the zoo and a bunch of the creatures got out.
Yeah.
Is there a local zoo that just like actual apes went missing? Because these like everything you're describing sounds terrifying, but also just sounds like a gorilla.
Okay, so there is something about that a little bit later on in the story.
Okay.
So, yes, but no.
Okay.
I'll talk about it later.
Okay.
In one Florida town, these creatures were said to have invaded homes, stalked people, and killed several of a farmer's livestock, including a horse and a bull, these big ape-like creatures. A posse had been formed in an effort to locate the alleged creature. However, no body or evidence was ever found.
I gotta get my posse together, go hunt down the skunk ape.
I know. This thing was invading homes. It was killing wildlife, and they never found it. Posse or not. On January 9th.
Posse is such a funny word.
I know. Especially when afterwards I try and talk and it goes, on January 9th. On January 9th, 1974, just after midnight, Richard Lee Smith slammed his car into something near the intersection of U.S. Route 27 and Hollywood Boulevard. This is located at the eastern edge of the Everglades in Pembroke Pines. Mr. Smith told the Florida Highway Patrol that initially he thought he'd hit a tall man in dark clothing. But when a 7 to 8 foot tall hairy creature lifted itself off the road, he was stunned.
And terrified? That would be terrifying.
Yeah, it roared at him and then it charged at his car and he hit the gas and he just gunned it out of there. Afterwards, drivers throughout the area reported seeing a limping giant walking along US 27.
Okay.
Police officers were dispatched to the scene to investigate. And at around 2 a.m., the Highland Gardens patrolman reported a huge hairy creature limping along the road a few miles from the accident scene before it disappeared into the brush. Come dawn, the police searched the swamp via helicopter, but they found nothing. I guess they were going under the idea that maybe it was just like a literal very hairy man.
Both of our stories involve a lot of people searching after the fact and being like,
I don't know.
I don't know what you're talking about because there's nothing
there's
here.
There's literally nothing here. You guys are liars. In 1977, a bill was proposed to the Florida state legislature to make it illegal to, quote, take, possess, harm, molest anthropoids or humanoid animals. However, it was...
Nobody can see the face I'm making, but it's confused...
If it makes you feel any better, that failed to pass, so it's still legal to do so?
I don't like that.
And the sightings of the skunk ape continued. Also in 1977, a former police officer named Charles Stokeman, his wife Leslie, and their three kids lived near the ocean in Key Largo. On July 14th of that year, Charles and his 14-year-old son, Charlie, were collecting bottles behind their home when they caught sight of an enormous 8 or 9 foot tall skunk ape. Quote, it had a huge head and shoulders, Charlie said, long fur all over, and it stank like a dirty wet dog. The noise he made was a high-pitched wailing.
Ooh, just stanky.
Just stanky.
This poor creature is just like, I don't know how to bathe. Leave me alone.
I'm sorry, I have a glandular problem. He then, he then cleared about 30 feet of brush from around their home, hoping that that would deter the creature from coming back. Like, oh, you have nowhere to hide. Therefore, please go away.
That's actually a really good idea for wildlife.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And insects, too.
Yeah. You cannot hide.
You don't give it a place to hide, so you clear it out. Yep.
Yeah. But the overpowering stench of the skunk ape persisted over several nights.
Okay, but did you check to make sure you didn't leave something out of the fridge? Because once I left a carton of eggs out and it got bad.
What? Ew. Well, that's what he smells like.
That's what I was saying. Like, that's where I'm like, it does smell bad. So maybe like.
Maybe that's.
Did you throw a carton of eggs in the trash and then forget to take the trash out?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm just saying, assess your life, man. Do your chores.
Yeah. Yeah. At one point, local law enforcement received a call about a massive creature crouched beneath the cover of a shed on the Stokeman property. So maybe not the eggs. Maybe there really was a creature.
Okay.
I don't know. Monroe County Sheriff Deputy Bill Hossie, Florida Marine Patrol Captain Jack Gillen, and Sergeant Randall Chin from the Plantation Key substation? Don't know why that was hard for me to say.
Sometimes a word just fucks with you, man.
Substation isn't normally a word I read. Well, anyway, they came to investigate. According to WestPalmBeach.com, Officer Chin was reported to have said, quote, "There is definitely a problem there. These people are truly scared to death," unquote. Eventually, Leslie Stokeman and her children fled their home after catching a glimpse of the creature 30 feet outside of her bedroom window. She's like, fuck that. Her husband actually stayed at the house and slept alone with their shotgun for about a month after that. And although there wasn't another sighting of the creature, the family did eventually move to Dade County. They were like, you know what, we're just
over there.
We're just done. I don't want to do this. I want to be in the same house as my husband. He doesn't want to sleep with a shotgun his whole life. It's a whole big deal.
You know, I think that's a fair point.
I think so, too. Several Everglade wildlife tour bus operators and their guests have allegedly seen the now famous skunk ape. One bus driver reported that some of the wildlife bait stands, chock full of lima beans, had been raided, and then they were surrounded by really strange tracks. Noting the apparent love for the lima beans.
So the skunk ape is a carnivore, a cannibalistic carnivore.
But he loves a good lima bean.
Lima beans. Really, of all the other protein sources, that's your...
Well...
This is the skunk ape that's gone vegetarian.
There's a good reason for it. So he noted the apparent love of the lima bean. And so he baited several more locations with lima beans. which led to multiple eyewitness accounts of the skunk ape in the area. He attributed the sightings and the apparent need to find food for an unseasonably high flooding area, which pushed many animals up to higher ground. So he thinks it wasn't necessarily a love of lima beans themselves, but instead they like, fuck, this is all I get, lima beans. It's like when your parents say you can't leave the table unless you eat your fucking lima beans. He's like, fine.
Flesh or lima beans?
Maybe there were no other skunk apes near there, so they couldn't eat them.
Like, no flesh, lima beans. I am very lucky that neither of my parents made me eat lima beans. Because I have tried them, and they're fucking gross.
I don't like them.
I have never met a person who likes them.
I don't know why everyone insists on eating them. Like, why?
If you are out there and you like lima beans, tell us why.
Let us know even if you don't have a reason, even if you just like them, let us know. On Wednesday, July 16th of 1997, a guide for Pelican Tours named Steve Goodbread was driving a... See, bread is much better than lima beans. Yes. Goodbread. Was driving a bus with 30 tourists along Turner River Road in Big Cypress, just east of Okeepe. He was stopped at a wooden bridge when he saw a large creature standing erect behind some brush some 70 yards away. He described it as being about 7 feet tall with thick brown hair covering its entire body, and it was rocking back and forth, shaking the bushes, and appeared to be irritated by their presence. Honestly, it just sounds like he has anxiety.
Yeah.
Stephen Goodbread and his passengers observed what they believed to be a skunk ape for at least 15 minutes. He tried to convince one of the tourists who had a telephoto lens on her camera to get off the bus and take photographs.
Whoa! Not cool, man.
But she refused.
Yeah, you stand your ground. I don't care. You know what? You take my telephoto lens and you fucking...
You can do it.
You get off the bus and take the fucking picture. I'm not doing that. Fuck you.
In retrospect, according to the West Palm Beach website, Goodbread said it was probably a good idea that no one got off the bus.
Yeah. Your bread's not so good now. I'm calling you moldy bread from now on.
Yeah, no good bread. You're stale bread.
Stale
bread.
That's
who you are, Steve Stale Bread. He eventually drove away. The creature was still in sight when they drove away. They also said that although he fully believes that it was a skunk ape, that he had never actually advertised it as a way to get more tourists and passengers. I think it's a way to say, like, hey, he had this experience, but he was never like, hey, come see the skunk ape.
So he's like,
come ride my bus.
This was the thing. I'm not using it. I'm not monopolizing on.
Yes. Yes. He wasn't using it for publicity.
Capitalizing would be a better word. Yeah. Yes.
Also in 1997, a 9-year-old boy named Dave Sheely saw the skunk ape while deer hunting with his brother Jack in the Big Cypress National Preserve.
Okay. Okay. I'm sensing a trend here.
Yeah. A lot of stuff is happening in the Big Cypress National Preserve. Quote, it was walking across the swamp and my brother spotted it first, Sheely recalled. But I couldn't see over the grass. I wasn't tall enough. My brother picked me up and I saw it about 100 yards away. It looked like a man, but completely covered in hair, unquote. Now, Dave Sheely owns and operates the Skunk Ape Research Center, which is located in Okopee. That one word again. Okopee, a small town adjacent to the Big Cypress National Preserve.
This is a very niche business that they've gotten themselves into.
Dave believes that there are 7 to 9 of the creatures currently inhabiting the Everglades.
Okay, okay.
Another sighting happened in Big Cypress less than a week later when real estate agent Jan Brock spotted a skunk ape across from her. It ran across while she was driving. Okay. She described it as a very shaggy looking, maybe 6.5 to 7 foot tall.
Okay, okay.
Not 15 minutes later, the Okipi? God damn it. I should have looked up that word before I started recording.
Yeah.
The fire chief from that place photographed the same creature after it entered the forest near his home. Quote, at first I thought it was a bear, but bears don't stay up on two legs the way this thing was. Unquote.
All right. All right.
Sightings of the creature persisted throughout the 2000s as well, such as an incident that occurred on December 29th, 2000, when the Sarasota Sheriff's Department received an anonymous letter with 2 enclosed photos from a woman claiming to show what her husband believed was an escaped orangutan.
Okay, okay. So we're getting more into like the...
the actual like creatures we know and can identify. The darn thing had been stealing fruit off their back porch. Well, she never
rude.
Said it. I know. And while she never said anything about a skunk ape in her letter, the photo clearly shows a large primate that is definitely not an orangutan. Many researchers actually believe that the skunk apes are descendants of orangutans that may have escaped from traveling circuses.
Okay.
Traveling circuses were not uncommon in Florida during the mid-20th century. And while there may be some logic to it, some of the sighting descriptions do resemble an orangutan, the average orangutan stands only 4.5 feet tall and weighs less than 200 pounds.
That's why I'm saying gorilla.
Whereas most of the skunk ape sightings note a creature around 7 feet tall and 2 to 3 times the average weight of a typical orangutan. And while, you know, evolution does exist, and some people use it to explain the difference between the two, it doesn't seem to explain the legend of the tall man, the Esti Jopjocki, that has been seen by the Seminoles in the Everglades for over 200 years. And that is the story of the skunk ape.
Of the skunk ape. Okay, so on a skeptic scale.
Yes.
I want you to know that this story was extremely well written and I deeply enjoyed it.
Thank you.
I'm going to give it a 3.
That's fine.
And I'm giving it a 3 because I have no explanation for why it's been seen for over a century.
Two centuries.
I have no explanation for that. But of the most recent sightings, my brain is just still like, escaped gorilla? Like, gorillas escaped. You know how many creatures, like invasive species, exist because people decided to get pets? And then release these pets out into the wild. And then you're like, did these pets create their own little, like,
I'm sorry, are community? You pulling an alligator in the sewers?
Yes. Yes, I am. But recognizing that that is as unlikely as a cryptid.
Yeah.
I'm still, so I'm going mid 3, leaning towards 4. I'm like, I'm stuck in that. I would probably rotate between the 3 and the 4, depending on the day.
Okay.
And I want to believe it. It's just one of those ones where my brain is just like, it just sounds like they're like talking about some really fucking stinky gorillas.
So I'm going to give it a, I think I'm going to give it a 3.
Okay.
And I'm going to give it a 3 for the same reason why I give like Bigfoot and Nessie and Caddy a 3 is because I think that maybe it exists. I don't know.
But could have a scientific.
I'm just saying that it could be like a descendant of something that already, like it's not paranormal. I think it's just normal, but it is odd. And that's why it gets a 3 versus a 1.
I'm here for it. Me and you are on the same page today.
Right here.
All right. If you have a listener story you'd like to share, you can do so by emailing us, leftofskeptic@gmail.com. You could also send it to us by visiting our website, www.leftofskeptic.com, and clicking the listener stories tab at the top of the page. You can also get there through the link tree in our bio. You can choose to remain anonymous or include your name, whatever you prefer. We just ask that you please include your pronouns.
You can also follow us on social media. We are on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter at Left of Skeptic and Facebook at Left of Skeptic Podcast.
Well, we want to thank you all for joining us this week.
Yeah.
We love you and appreciate you.
Oh my God, it's so true.
Happy Spooky Wednesday.
Happy Spooky Wednesday.
Okay. Okay.
Bye. Au revoir.
Ooh, we're going French.
'Left of Skeptic' podcast is written and hosted by Kayla Moria and Brittany Lind. This week's episode is edited by me, Brittany Lind. The 'Left of Skeptic' music is by Dave Melling and Emily Havoc, and our artwork is by Al LeBlanc. Okay, bye!